This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Good evening. The title of tonight's installment is Who's White? Part 2. I began this discussion last time by talking about this very important question, who's white? And I said that it comes down to the short answer being Europeans. And I said it begs the question, then, who are the Europeans? And I launched into a reading here of an article that sums up who the Aryans are, written by Erman Vinson. And maybe I wasn't all that clear about that, but basically this piece sums up where at least some elements of Europe come from. And that would be the Aryans, the Indo-European peoples. And that's why this is important. So I'm going to continue reading. I think I got about a third of the way through the last time, and I have about two-thirds of the way to go. He spoke at the beginning about the Indo-European language, and that's where this will pick up. Traditionally, Greek, Latin, and Sanskrit were considered the closest languages to Proto-Indo-European. And much of the reconstructed Aryan proto-language is based on them. Modern Lithuanian, however, is the most archaic living language, closer to the original Aryan speech than any other. There is even an Indo-European language, Tokharian, attested in Chinese Turkestan, which indicates that Aryans must have made an appearance in the Far East, a long-standing piece of linguistic evidence which has recently been confirmed by the discovery of the physical remains of a blonde-haired people in China. He's referring there to the mummies of the Tarim Basin. Tarim Basin is north of Tibet. Perhaps the most famous proof for the prehistoric existence of Proto-Indo-European is the word for king, which is rex in Latin, raja in Sanskrit, Re in Old Irish, along with a host of other cognates. All are obviously variants of a common word for king. Since none of the peoples speaking these various languages were in physical contact with one another during the historical period, in other words, at the time for which written records exist, comparative philologists inferred that their respective languages must have evolved from a single proto-language. Which is the only way of explaining the presence of the same word for king among such widely dispersed peoples. The Romans clearly didn't borrow rex from the Irish or the Indo-Aryans. Each had instead inherited their own word for king from a common ancestral language. Philologists can also, moreover, safely conclude that the Aryans must have had kings prior to emigrating from their original homeland in southern Russia. In fact, a fairly detailed body of evidence about prehistoric political organization, marriage practices, and religious beliefs can be reconstructed on the basis of the survival of common vocabulary in the various extant Indo-European languages. In other words, just to break in here, the traditions of the ancient Aryans that have left their evidence in the languages that survive today, that trace their roots back to Indo-European beginnings. in a fairly detailed body of evidence, in fact, a fairly detailed body of evidence about prehistoric, oh, I already read that, can be reconstructed on the basis of common vocabulary. Yeah, they worshipped the sky god. They traced descent through the male line. They raised cattle. They drank mead. And here's one small flaw. Erman Vinson doesn't make many mistakes, but here he misspelled mead as M-E-E-D, but it's actually mead, M-E-A-D, meaning the fermented honey concoction. They used horse-drawn chariots, which they probably invented, as weapons of war, etc. Even the red, white, and blue slash green that appears in so many modern flags may have an Aryan pedigree. It is likely a survival from the Aryan tripartite social division of their communities into priests, which white stood for, warriors, which red stood for, and herders and cultivators, which the blue or green stood for. Aryans, or more specifically Indo-Aryans, so he's talking now about the Aryans that settled in the Indian peninsula, make their first notable appearance in history around 2000 to 1500 BC as invaders of northern India. The Sanskrit Rig Veda, a collection of religious texts still revered by modern Hindus, records, often enigmatically, their gradual subjugation of the dark-skinned inhabitants, the Dasyas. For example, and he's quoting here, a snippet of the Rig Veda, Indra, which he says is equivalent to the Norse for Thor or Celtic for Tyrannus, has thrown open the fortresses of the Dasis, which in their wombs hid the black people. He created land and water for Manu, Aryan for man. Another section he quotes is, lower than all besides hast thou, O Indra, cast down the Dasis, abject tribes of Dasis. And another quote, after slaying the Dasyas, let Indra with his white friends win land. Let him win the sun and water. And the final quote here from the Rig Veda, Indra subdued the Dasyu color and drove it into hiding. I guess what he's citing here is these various sections showing whites or giving evidence that whites conquered the black peoples of the Indian peninsula. He does actually make one longer quote here. It looks like a section of poetry or a story of some sort. With all outstripping chariot wheel, O Indra, thou far-famed hast overthrown the twice 10 kings. Thou goest from fight to fight intrepidly, destroying castle after castle here with strength. And this is, I suppose, evidence of the aggression of the Indo-European peoples. And in fact, the very next paragraph, Vinson remarks on that. He says, the Aryans were remarkably expansionist, and almost everywhere they went, they conquered and subjugated the indigenous peoples, imposing their languages and to varying degrees, their religious beliefs on the natives, and receiving in turn contributions from the peoples whom they conquered. Aryan invasions, or more accurately, a long sequence of different invasions by speakers of Indo-European languages, swept across old Europe beginning as early as the 4th millennium BC. Now this is where it gets a bit interesting. The 4th millennium BC is 4000 to 3000 BC, which is 5,000 to 6,000 years ago from today. And over time, the conquerors and the conquered melded into specific peoples with distinctive languages. Most of the contemporary inhabitants of Europe, along with their respective early national cultures, are the result of interaction between successive waves of Aryan invaders and culture of the particular white people that they conquered and with whom they later intermarried. And as a result, almost all modern European languages are members of the Western branch of the Indo-European family tree. Now, this paragraph right here is, I could have, and I was tempted to simply quote this one paragraph, but when I read the whole thing, I thought, you know, the whole context here, this historic background is necessary to understand this paragraph for anyone who isn't already familiar with who the Aryans are and who the Indo-Europeans are. This would have seemed a bit strange to just say, hey, this is who Europeans are. They're a melding of the old European peoples and these Indo-European invaders. But that's what we get to here. Now, this begs the question, who were the old Europeans? And I think I can talk about that in another installment in the future. There's a very good book or long never published book that I might cite about that. Let me continue here with Vincent's piece. The birth of a European culture, however, predates the arrival of the Indo-Europeans. The cave art of Lascaux, which some have identified as the first flowering of Western man's creative genius, was the work of old Europeans, as were Stonehenge in the north and the Minoan palace culture of Crete in the south. A pan-European religious symbolism had already evolved, much of which was later incorporated into Indo-European mythologies. So there was a bit of a fusion there between the religions of the people, the old Europeans, and the Indo-European peoples invading. They were later incorporated into Indo-European mythologies, including various regional adaptations of the ubiquitous old European reverence for the mother goddess. Many of the principal figures in Greek mythology predate the arrival of Aryans, and during the course of ancient history, old European religious beliefs and practices continually reasserted themselves. I would inject here just to say that it is probably more than religious beliefs, but personality traits and appearance as well. The actual facial structures and bone structures of the peoples that were conquered probably poked through as well. Europe is European, continuing with Vincent, because the conquerors and the conquered were members of the same white race, different branches of the same family tree. India is a morass of poverty because the bulk of the conquered, with whom the Indo-Aryans eventually intermarried, were non-white Vedoids. The lesson is obvious. Even today, high-caste Hindus can still be identified by their Caucasian features and light skin, and the poorest and most backward parts of India are generally the darkest. As an aside, recent genetic studies have indicated that the Basques of Aquitaine and the Pyrenees are probably the purest form of old Europeans as they existed prior to the arrival of the Indo-European invaders. They evidently emerged from the invasions of Europe unconquered, and they remained sufficiently isolated to retain their own language, a non-Indo-European language. The Pyrenees is the mountain range in between Spain and France. I'm not sure where Aquitaine is, but I would guess it's somewhere nearby since they're also Basques there. That ends the history of the Aryans, according to Vincent, and he has a second section here titled, What Should We Call Ourselves? And this is what really piqued my interest, because that is, after all, what I'm after here as well, and why I talked a little bit about nomenclature before launching into this in the last installment. He writes, the history of the Aryans, of which the proceeding is a necessarily simplifying summary, is not merely an interesting curiosity. It has important implications for how we define ourselves. A German, for example, is Aryan only insofar as the original inhabitants of ancient Germany were conquered by invaders who spoke an Indo-European language. In no significantly genetic sense can he be called a pure Aryan. Even at the time of the Indo-European invasions of old Europe, the term had lost much of its original meaning as the name of a distinct ethnic group. During their successive migrations from their homeland, the Aryans had absorbed other white populations and had acquired often distinctive physiognomies. Physiognomy is an interesting word. Most racialists, I think, understand it. But just to explain here quickly, it's the sort of pseudoscience of judging inner character, a person's inner character, by their outward appearance, by their mostly by their face. And I think what Vincent is referring here to is a combination of character and face. That's what would be distinctive about the peoples of Europe and the Indo-European invaders, is both their character and their face, without saying that they're connected necessarily to each other. Along with mutually incomprehensible, though related, languages. Racialist writing is often contaminated by a divisive Nordicism and a quasi-mystical adoration of the Aryan, and Hitler himself often used Aryan and Nordic interchangeably. But contrary to popular belief, National Socialist race theorists never claimed that the Germans were Aryans, nor even that the bulk of the Germanic gene pool was Aryan. They argued, rather, that the Nordics were more genetically Aryan than, say, Mediterranean Italians, a much more modest claim, which has the additional virtue of being true. Northern Europe was sparsely populated prior to the Indo-European migrations into it, whereas Southern Europe already had an existing civilization and a much larger population. A Nordic German or Swede can thus rightly say that he is more Aryan than a Greek or a Southern Italian, but he shouldn't bother doing it, since the distinction is by now so immaterial that it only serves to divide whites. Here's one place where I would maybe disagree with Vincent. He's getting more into a policy recommendation here, and I'm not so sure I agree with that. I think it's important that all of us understand these distinctions and talk about them as much as we want to talk about them, and whoever wants to talk about them should talk about them and make those distinctions if they please. But more on that in a little bit later. For the term Aryan to have any validity in a contemporary context, it can only denote members of the European cultures that arose from the interaction of Indo-European speaking, or in other words, Aryan, invaders, and the white Europeans who preceded them. It cannot mean Aryans proper, since no such people, in the strict sense, have existed for at least 2,000 years. Now, I wonder why he says that that they haven't existed for 2,000 years. He just said that the old European peoples did survive, at least a small number of them, in the Basque peoples. I wonder, and this is just me speculating myself, if the Aryans, I guess, miscegenated themselves out of existence. This, what they did in the Indian subcontinent, that they did in Europe as well. And what Vincent said earlier was that the reason they didn't disappear entirely, the reason Europe is European, is because the populations were closely related enough genetically to begin with that the Aryan or Indo-European people blended together there with the old Europeans that were already there. Whereas in India, they sort of melted into the black population that was already there. But that's just my speculation, not knowing. I think Vincent knows more about the subject here than I do. An additional difficulty with Aryan, even if it is used in this loose sense, is that it still excludes a fair number of people most of us would consider white. In addition to Basque, Finnish and Hungarian are also not Indo-European languages, and neither Finns nor Hungarians are descendants of a people who spoke Proto-Indo-European. Yet both are obviously white. Well, again, I would have to disagree with Vincent. Maybe they're both obviously white to him. I don't really have an opinion on Finns. I don't know enough about the Finns or the Hungarians for that matter. And as I understand, there's a very interesting story behind who the Hungarians are, and they came relatively late into Europe. Maybe I'll talk about that sometime, because I'd like to learn about that a bit myself. So I'd have to learn about a bit about it before I could talk about it. But I can't speak intelligently about either the Finns or the Hungarians, really, about whether they're white or not. And I wouldn't try to dictate to anyone else that these people have to be white. I think that's kind of silly when people debate whiteness and they try to insist that their definition of white is the definition of white. It isn't. It's a fairly subjective thing that different people have different feelings about who they consider part of their in-group, who they consider white. And I don't think that that's unique to white people either. So it's not necessarily a weakness for us. It's just a fact. I'll continue with Vincent here. White is thus preferable to Aryan as a name for the race whose existence we must secure. But white is also imperfect. We should never fetishize minor racial differences by turning insignificant gradations in whiteness into a hierarchy of relative degrees of racial purity. Most Italians, Greeks, and Spaniards are members of the Mediterranean branch of our white race, and they are generally somewhat darker than Nordics. Most Ashkenazi Jews are, conversely, physically more white, and he writes white in lowercase in this instance, with quotes around it, I guess referring to skin color and appearance more than whiteness as an identity. He says they're physically more white than the average Greek, yet these white Jews are the principal subverters of Western civilization, whereas Greeks, Italians, and Spaniards are among its principal creators. I would agree with that point that he makes there, although I have a lot more to say about Ashkenazi Jews. I would just agree with him to say that Jews aren't white. I don't consider them white, and I would recommend that other whites reconsider if they do consider Jews to be white, and for the simple matter that they have white skin. That's a pretty bad reason. But I'll get more into that another time. What we really need is some classificatory term that indicates, quote, non-Jewish people of European descent, unquote. So that's what Vincent means by white, and that is what I mean when I say white as well. I mean people of European descent who aren't Jews. And I would exclude maybe a few other people on the fringes of what other people consider white. Unfortunately, no such term exists. White and Aryan are acceptable substitutes only if we understand their deficiencies. Euro-American racial nationalism differs markedly from the more ethnically based nationalisms of Europe. In Europe, ethnic distinctions among whites are a valuable political tool for preserving a, quote, Europe of nations, unquote, against the forces of capitalist globalization and third world immigration. But on this continent, we are, for good or ill, and I think for good, an amalgam of different European ethnicities, despite our undoubted Anglo-Celtic cultural and legal core. It is inevitable, though unfortunate, that under these circumstances, racialists will sometimes quibble among ourselves about the exact contours of the category white, that is, which ethnic groups are part of us and which are not. Yet what cannot be disputed, at least by anyone who wants to be constructive about the racialist movement on this continent, is that we all must define ourselves as Euro-American or perish. Otherwise, we are simply an unconnected series of disparate ethnic groups defenseless against a consciously anti-white rainbow coalition that aims to bury us all. I think that's pretty well said. I think we need to recognize, we collectively, white people, and without glossing over the differences between us, we do need to recognize and identify ourselves as having more in common than we do with other peoples who aren't of European heritage. I think that's almost a trivial statement, but it needs to be said. There's a continuum here. It's not just that you can only trust yourself or your family, and then or the whole human race. There's a whole spectrum in between there, and one of my objections to the reality of the political system in place right now is that you have to choose one or the other. There's a false dichotomy that people are encouraged to either be radical individualists or radical humanists and care about only themselves and getting rich and taking care of their own needs, or care about the whole world and everybody in it. And there's this conspicuous gap, as I've pointed out, for white people, that we're not supposed to care about our group, and our group meaning either a narrow group of national origin or a racial group, in this case being white. So I think that's enough about Ermin Vincent's piece. I may refer back to it in future installments, but I want to move now to another piece that hopefully I can cover quickly here, or at least hit the high points of, and that's a piece called it addresses the same question. It's from Stormfront, and it's titled "Read This Before Asking Who's White." It's one of their guidelines, I guess, for posting there. And it comes from a podcast, so it was actually delivered on via internet like this podcast on November 3rd, 2006. And the fellow introduces himself, so I'll just start reading here. He says, "Good evening. I'm John Law, Stormfront senior moderator and National Vanguard member. Tonight I'd like to address the first part of the term white nationalism and answer the question, who's white? It's a fair question, a fundamental question, really. Our enemies have no trouble identifying us, but sometimes people who are just becoming racially aware have difficulty answering this question. It's the kind of question that can invite hair-splitting arguments or mind-numbing technical discussion." I hope that the discussion that I just had about Vincent, that none of you think that that was mind-numbing. I find it fascinating myself, even though I understand most of it already, and before I did the research for this discussion. Understood it, but it is useful, I think, to go over this stuff. So again, back to John Law, those things are fine in their place, as John Law says, but what folks really need to get started on this path of white nationalism is a simple working definition that can be readily applied to almost any situation. And guess what? He comes to the same conclusion that I and Vincent have, which is probably why I like this piece. He writes, so in response to the question, who's white, we answer, non-Jewish people of wholly European descent, no exceptions. What comprises European? Those areas north of the Mediterranean and west of the Urals, corresponding roughly to what was formerly known as European Christendom. The word holy, of wholly European descent, sometimes a person might volunteer that he is some small part non-white, like 1/64th or 1/28th, and then ask if we still consider him white. The answer is that if a person identifies with his non-white part so much that he is concerned about it and feels compelled to tell us about it, then we consider him to be non-white. That would apply to that Jew that was the smart-ass Jew at Townsend University that I've mentioned previously, who thinks his Jewishness is so important, and if it's so important to him, it should be important to us too, and it means he's telling us that he's not us. He goes on, John Law, this is a good piece, so I think I'm out of time for this week, but I'm going to save this one over until next time too, and finish reading it the next time. Mr. Law here goes on to quote William Pierce and some more of National Alliance policy. But I'll just point out, it's the same definition. Who's white? Europeans. People of European descent. And not Jews. Jews aren't included. I'll have a lot more to say on that subject another time. But that's all for tonight. See you next time.